So state regulators are trying to figure out exactly why Connecticut's biggest utility companies jacked up their customers' power bills. So PURA, which is the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, they held a hearing yesterday, as we've been discussing, as part of an investigation into the massive rate hikes. So it began at 10 a.m., and it ended at around 6. PURA schedules hearings on recent power company rates on the increases. That's what it was really mainly devoted to. And, of course, due to the COVID-19 concerns, the hearing was virtual, which means that anyone with a computer could watch or participate. As you recall, all right, let me just backtrack this up before we bring in our next guest. Eversource and United Illuminating, the customers began complaining that their energy costs had skyrocketed. Many people said their bill was more than doubled. So Eversource initially blamed the hike on a deal foisted upon them by state lawmakers to buy electricity from Millstone, which, as you know, is a power plant in Waterford. And then later, Millstone's owner, Dominion, said the contract did not force Eversource to raise its rates, and the utility company just used Millstone as a scapegoat. Eversource leaders stated that the pandemic also forced them to jack up people's bills because they lost a lot of revenue that they normally collect from businesses that were either shut down or operating at a reduced capacity. The utility company sought to recoup some of that missing money from customers. Now, during the hearing, Eversource admitted $124 million was passed along to the consumer. They say some of that money comes from a 35% increase in usage, but also cited the Millstone agreement that has them buying power from the Waterford plant. Eversource says the $124 million loss can be found in the customer's FMCC delivery charge. All right, I want to bring in our next guest. He is the ranking senator, I believe. He is on the Energy and Technology Committee. We've had him on many a times. One of the good guys down in the southern part of the state, State Senator Paul Formica. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, everybody. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself? I would imagine busy, huh?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well. Yeah,
it's good to hear.
Summer, restaurants winding down. We're not sure about school starts, so we're still busy. The weather's still great down here in southeastern Connecticut. So.
Yeah, you're right on the water down there. It's nice. Yeah, I know it is. I love spending my time down along the Connecticut shoreline, and I know you've got your restaurant down there too, right? I mean, Flanders Fish Market.
We do. Yeah, our 37th year, and
wow.
We got the greatest staff in the business, and they're working like crazy to get us through the Labor Day. Everybody's pretty tired.
I would imagine. I've been there. Absolutely delicious. It's a fantastic restaurant. People can get a chance to go down there to Flanders Fish. It's excellent. But there'll be indoor dining, right? When the weather changes to cooler temperatures, I would imagine.
Yeah, we have about 50% capacity inside. People are using mostly for air conditioning reasons. And we have a lot of outside, that people are sitting out there. And,
sure.
But, it gets hot.
Oh, yeah. And believe me, everybody thinks, everybody can eat out during the summer. Well, when it was 95, which it was in the 90s a lot this year, you really don't, with high humidity, you really don't want to sit outside, quite frankly, right?
Yeah. And I think, that people working inside the house and having the air conditioners on, and I think that's driving a lot of the conversation that you've been having all morning, I think.
Yeah, we had former state senator, one of your former colleagues, and hopefully will be your colleague next year, Len Susio, on talking about really kind of covering a different angle than what we're going to cover, you and I, right now. I'm sure that I wouldn't expect you to partake in that entire PURA online public hearing, but you must have at least logged in for excuse me for a little while.
Yeah, I was on. I made a statement. Senator Blumenthal was on, and the governor, and then I made a statement following that. Watched for a while.
All right, so let's look at it from a couple of different angles. Since you mentioned Blumenthal and you mentioned Governor Lamont, as you've heard, they want to break up Eversource and really have it state-run, state-owned, and have municipalities themselves have a stake in this. Number one, is this even possible? Number two, would it really be I would imagine it would, but how? I guess so. Maybe more appropriately, I should ask, what would the cost savings to the consumer be? Let's take those questions first. Is that even possible? Do you foresee them doing that?
Well, I think it's going to be very difficult, and I'd love to see the model that Senator Blumenthal puts forward, as an alternative to what we have.
Mm-hmm.
What we have is a monopoly. What we have is a lot. There are a lot of problems involved with it. But let's look at the utilities that are municipally owned around the state. You know, Norwalk, Wallingford, Norwich, Groton. You know, they're all self-contained within their communities, and they've had the benefit of a number of decades in each case to build their infrastructure and to get things on board and to figure out how things happen. And I don't know that you could replicate that model for every town or every region or every county in the state without significant infrastructure investment cost, you know, to get that underway, not to mention bringing in the expertise to do it. And, what do you do with the telephone poles that are up and owned by Eversource? You'd have to buy them, or you'd have to rent them, or something. So I'm interested in the model. Those towns, because of their size and because of their service to the local area, were much more effective in managing the restoration of power than Eversource was. You know, they were able to coordinate with communities. They were able to coordinate with tree services. They were able to, get those lines that were down and tangled in trees completely deadened so that they would be safe to be removed. And I think that showed their ability to collaborate and coordinate was much better than Eversource. And they got their customers back online. So they've done a much better job. And I believe Senator Blumenthal alluded that to his comments. But to make the switch for everybody, to be like that is interesting. And then just a point of note, Governor talked yesterday about his experience in the cable industry. Well, Groton Utilities, which does a wonderful job with water and power, tried their hand at cable and ended up losing, tens of millions of dollars and had to sell their company for pennies on the dollar. So just because it's out there doesn't mean a municipality or a state can run it. And, I'd also make the argument, perhaps DMV, people might want to privatize some of the agencies that Connecticut's operating. So,
yeah,
but I'm willing to look at the model the senator puts forward.
Yeah, and so we're talking with State Senator Paul Formica. It's funny that you end up bringing up the Department of Motor Vehicles. That's exactly the example that Len Susio brought up, where people are complaining that we should privatize the DMV as maybe even other state agencies. And isn't it ironic that now people are saying, well maybe we don't like privatized energy? I think what people have the most concern about, and you mentioned the cable industry, is the difference between regulation and deregulation when it comes to monopolies and people not having a choice in the company that they would like to do business with.
Well, and we had a press conference. The energy leadership, the two chairs and two ranking members last week, outlining some plans for legislation that we thought might be helpful in reining in the utility. And one of the things that, I mentioned during that press conference was we have to look at the totality of how electricity is generated and transmitted here in the state. It's clearly something that needs to be improved. ISO New England is the grid manager, if you will, distributing power resources throughout the region to places. That model needs to be looked at. I think when we're talking about Millstone, and part of the problem with the cost of Millstone is the fact that, you know, Connecticut, because it's a Connecticut asset, because it has Connecticut jobs, and mm-hmm. because it provides $1.5 billion in economic impact to the state of Connecticut and pays taxes and property taxes here, Connecticut is shouldering that burden, which could be spread out potentially through ISO New England. And that's a conversation that I think we have to have. All the major generators, perhaps it's a new model to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And, so there are some things that are going to happen. We need to look at deregulation and look back and say, hey, is that working for us still? Or as things move forward to a point where we need to relook at a decision made, you know, over 20 some odd years ago. So, especially with renewables coming online and batteries, backup and storage technology becoming, more reasonable in the next few years, I think, and affordable. All of these things really need a comprehensive look, because it's not just one part. Eversource's mismanagement of the restoration, I think, brought this to the forefront.
Mm.
But one of the questions I asked yesterday was, did PURA itself approve that rate increase in June? And under what criteria did they do that? They were asking a lot of questions yesterday.
Well, they did. They did approve that, right?
My understanding, I thought they did. But then somebody said to me, no, Eversource just gets to tell them. And so I was hoping.
Well, they told them, but then PURA approved it.
They approved it. And I asked yesterday, what criteria did they use to approve it? And I think, I don't know that question was addressed yesterday. So hopefully in their report, they'll talk about, how does PURA handle these rate increases? And maybe there's a new mechanism or a new process or a new procedure that we have to go through, to manage it. And, people talking about the cost or yesterday of Millstone moving forward, that's supposed to be averaged against the projected net usage, and Eversource admitted that they missed the mark on that,
mm-hmm.
partly the reason due to the fact that everybody's home and because of the pandemic and working from home and therefore using more power, and some businesses are not, but it was still something that they missed the mark on. So,
well, yeah, but it's still the second hottest, this year being the second hottest summer. I mean, yeah, when you look at hottest summers on record here in Connecticut, last year was actually a hotter summer than this summer. So when you look at the invoice of your bill, that there is a bar chart of how much power that you just use and you just got billed for, and you can compare it to 1 year to the month. In other words, you don't want to compare it to last month, because there's different climate. There's different, the weather conditions, particularly here in New England, is different from month to month. Even though it's summer, each month is unique in and of itself. So you really want to compare apples to apples. So I would compare June of 2020 to June of 2019. And then go back to your check log, your ledger, and find out, what did I pay last year for the same exact month, and then make the comparison to what you just got billed. And then you could look at the bar chart and say, did I use more? Did I use less? Was it equal? How far off? I mean, that's really the only fair way to compare your current rate. So here's a question that I have for you, and it regards PURA. What are the chances then that PURA will lower our energy rate, our power rate, that we, our Eversource bill, and if they're able to, how significant do you think it really will be?
Well, I don't know that they're able or willing to do that. I think they're trying to find out what really makes up the meat and potatoes of what those costs are as it relates to how Eversource produces its operational generation of transmission, and then the managing of the energy generated due to deregulation. They can't generate power. They can only transmit it. So, the the examples of the high cost of transmission with a low cost of power usage, you know, they're saying, well, you use less power, we got to charge you more to make up the difference. So there's clearly a way that a need for us to look at how that works. PURA, you know, may need some more tools in order to do the job you suggest. That's part of the reason that we're talking about legislation, that some of which may get introduced in a special session if one is called in September. But the real work needs to be done by a number of committees out in Hartford in January, where they can, you know, we can have a long conversation, bring people in, talk about the need for change and how things work and what are, you know, what are the best model? What are the other states doing? And, you know, another question is what's going to happen with a life without Millstone? The states around the country are losing nuclear all the time, and it's costing, you know, economic devastation in the region where they're located. And also, you know, there's no real replacement, especially here in Connecticut, for that kind of power. And that's why it has to be a broader conversation.
Well, you remember, I mean, the threat that they had made in 2018, saying if we don't have this contract, you know, we're going to go out of business. And there's about 1,600 employees that make a very, respectable salary. So, not, I mean, you're thinking of 1,600 people, 1,600 families losing their job. And
imagine the devastation in southeastern Connecticut.
Even
that kind of economy. I mean, one only has to look at the comments in Green Bay and the comments in upstate New York. You know, New York State provided $400 to $500 million in direct subsidy to keep those northern New York State nuclears open because of that reason.
And there's other businesses around there that are affected, you know, that are in business and do well because their clientele are the people who work at Millstone. Sandwich, I referenced that earlier this morning, and sandwich shops, coffee shops, other mom-and-pop businesses, you know. And
gas stations,
exactly.
Philanthropy, you know, commissioners on Board of Education, volunteers, you know, the list goes on and on. And I think the model that we put forward to keep Millstone going, you know, they're paying, Eversource is paying and UI 4.99 cents, you know, for that power. You know, they're getting 7.35 cents for their standard service as of July 1. You know, there's got to be some math there that we can do.
What about micro? I've only got about a minute left, Senator. What about microgrids? What if we broke this up and like what Wallingford is doing, you know, where they, you know, they keep their costs low. There's really no renewables, but it's very affordable. And people in Wallingford must be sitting back with their feet up going.
Well, I think you're right. Wallingford is one of those towns that is managing their own utilities, and, you know, did such a good job in restoration. But microgrids could be the answer. The beginning of the next answer, I'll say, where we put microgrids in important areas of communities and cities and towns so that when the power goes off, it just kicks back on, and then we can kind of branch out from there.
All right. Yeah. No, listen, I agree with you. I think microgrids is the way of the future for this. Senator Paul Formica, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having us on always, and appreciate all you do, sir.